You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week are Sam Claiborne.
Hey, everybody.
Stella Chung is here, who it may be her first appearance on GameScoop. And if that's true, that is a grievous error, which we will attempt to make up for right now.
Yeah, I honestly can't remember. And the before times are just a haze now. So, I mean, you know, yeah.
It's from about 3 years ago. No one remembers.
And fun fact, Stella is like 2 feet away from me right now, but it's an optical illusion that we're not on the same stage together, which we are.
Yeah.
And John Davison is also joining us once again. Welcome back.
Hello.
And we got a great show for you this week. We'll flip through the September 2006 issue of Nintendo Power. That would be right on the eve of the launch of the Nintendo Wii. The weave of the launch.
Oh, yes, the weave. We all called it that at the time, I remember. And it's the 14-year anniversary of the weave now, so.
It is the 14-year anniversary, yeah. Well, no, it's the, 16th. And we got to talk about, we have to talk about ragdoll physics. What happened to ragdoll physics? The world wants to know. But first, Cyberpunk 2077. A video game that was released late in 2020 to some controversy, but then somewhere down the road, most of the kinks were ironed out. And I think most people would agree it's a pretty good video game to play today. It's getting its first expansion next year. Apparently maybe the only expansion this game is going to get.
That was a follow-up news story, is that this is all, I mean, it was kind of that one of those statements was like, it's all that was announced at the time. This is all that we're announcing at the time, but it also kind of seemed a little bit definitive.
Yeah, I mean, that's also pretty late after the launch of the game for the first big expansion to be coming 3 years.
Yeah, we're like the three Witcher ones out by then, probably, for example.
Yeah, probably, I think, Anyway, it's called Phantom Liberty, Cyberpunk Phantom Liberty. It's going to be a spy thriller, and I guess we should expect something a little bit different from the gameplay, but you're still playing as V, which, I don't know, maybe someone will have to explain to me. It's been a lot. I beat it at launch, but I haven't played much of it since then. So, like, my memory is that at the end of the game, my V is in a very, very bad place.
I
don't know what they have planned for V.
Well, because they didn't talk about if it's a continuation or if it's like a spinoff, right? I mean, I know what they said, but they didn't say chronologically. Like, Johnny Silverhand is like there and talking and everything. Back. So, like, how does that fit?
And Keanu Reeves is back. And then the brief trailer sees Johnny Silverhand warning V about an oath they just took, swearing allegiance to the new United States of America.
Yeah, yes, Sam, what do you make of this?
Well, there's a little bit of a, shall we say, wiki rabbit hole you can go down from, you know, there's a lot of card game and ephemera around Cyberpunk even before 2077 about, like, what the new United States of America are, or I think, and USA. And, you know, like...
USA.
Yes, I noticed that... oh man, I don't want, I won't go into this too much, but here's what I learned is that there is, you know, this new United States. It's so much like Fallout though, right? Is that there's like these like existing government factions still. And like Night City is actually in Morro Bay, California, which is like outside, it's west of San Luis Obispo, the coast town there. And so it's kind of like, that's in the United States, or what was the United States. And so the NUSA is one of the kind of factions I think that's around. But like, how Fallout does that all sound? Like, you know, the California, like what's going on with that? I don't know. I just think it's really interesting that it's, you know, could be about the remnants of the United States. Now, in terms of just like what the game is and like what you're going to be doing in it, it looks like it's still in Night City. It's like a district of Night City, more of that. That's pretty cool. I'm interested. I will definitely be playing this.
Stella, did you play Cyberpunk?
I did. I was one of those unfortunate people that had to play it at launch, right? Because I'm on the gameplay team. And it was, this was one of those titles that I was really looking forward to, like ever since it got announced, which like, if you remember, I had that original teaser with that girl with like the razor blade arms, like mantis arms and stuff. So I was very curious about it ever since then. But like, man, that launch was really disappointing. And I actually haven't gone back since they did all the fixes and stuff. But I know that it looks way better. It performs a lot better. But like, this expansion doesn't really seem to touch on the things that I'm most excited about. Like, there were so many different shops I wanted to go inside of that I wanted to explore. And like, yeah, I love Fallout. So I guess the new expansion looks really cool, or at least the new USA part seems really cool, but it's also really funny. It's like, oh, do we need a sequel to the USA? I don't think so.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. On this day of mourning.
Yeah.
When you played, did you play on PC?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. So even with that like high end, good PC, I did too. I really liked Cyberpunk at launch just because of PC. While everybody else on consoles was having a really bad time, but it still had bugs. It wasn't like it wasn't
we were definitely the lucky people to play on PC, and like I had all the specs that were proper for it, but it was still such a buggy mess. And it was really hard to tell what part was game design and what like, oh, did I solve the puzzle right, or did it just glitch out? So, you know, there was a lot of that confusion, which I understand that has been fixed now, but also this being the only expansion that may come out for Cyberpunk is kind of disappointing.
Showing a glitch trail right now. So, I just saw some ragdoll physics, too, so yeah, it's tying there you it go. All together.
Yeah, one has to wonder if they had more plans for more content, but they ended up having, you know, to spend, you know, a year or more just fixing the game that was originally launched in the first place.
Oh, that's a really good point. Yeah, I mean, that's it's like if The Witcher moved right on to these massive expansions. Like, those are 20, 30 hours. The Blood and Wine one is awesome. It's really, really cool. And yeah, I mean, that's the time you spend. And like, presumably, fixing Cyberpunk was a priority. Also, remember Next Gen Witcher? That's getting kicked down the road a bit. So it's like, I'm amazed that there's a DLC package at all coming out, I guess, in hindsight.
I mean, that's... speaking of The Witcher, that was sort of buried in CD Projekt's first half of the year earnings, that they still... It's still on track. The Next Gen version of The Witcher 3 is still on track to come this year. Which is just like, it's a little bit surprising to me.
And Next Gen Console Watch fans out there might be interested in knowing the Cyberpunk expansion is only coming to Next Gen. So you can tell, like, to save on development time, to make sure that they can just, like, get this out and working, only focusing on those new systems, too.
I mean...
Yeah.
Sorry. Damon, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, honestly, I like that a lot, that it's only coming to Next Gen, because they're being honest finally about like what they can and can't do, which was the problem with launch. They weren't honest about what they were capable of, what was ready. And so them actually being able to narrow it down to what they are like able to put resources into, I feel like that's them understanding, learning from the mistakes a little bit too late. But it is good to see that sort of transparency. It does suck for last gen console owners, but especially with the launch that they had, that was rough. But
yeah, it is. I think it is an unusual situation where the expansion is only coming to new gen consoles when the game was originally released on last gen consoles, even though it was released after the new gen consoles were out in the wild. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I could see some people, you know, being upset about that. But just anecdotally, looking in the comments on IGN, I really wasn't seeing. You know, I was seeing a lot of people being like, "Good, it's time to move on." John, can you think of any other time when like game came out for last gen, but the expansion is only coming out for next gen?
Not on that, but I think, you know, there was some stuff in the transition from, you know, out of the back end of 360 where there was a lot of like, you know, concurrent versions and no one really knew how to handle it. And but I think I think we're 2 years in on this generation now. Yep. Both the PlayStation and the Xbox are the fastest selling, despite the fact that you can't walk into a store and buy one.
Yeah.
They're both the fastest selling versions of the consoles ever. So I think it's a pretty safe bet for them. Did any of you ever play the tabletop Cyberpunk game? Because what I liked about the trailer for the expansion is it felt more like what I remember the tabletop being like. Then
really,
it was weird. Like for all the you know, all the hype leading up to it and the involvement of you know, a lot of the people that originally crafted the original Cyberpunk stuff, there was a lot of stuff in the core game that didn't really feel like it. You know, I think there was, you know, there were people with robot faces opening up and weird bug eyes and the mantis stuff, but fundamentally it was a sort of futuristic city environment with a lot of fairly conventional stuff in it. But I thought there were little glimpses of things in the trailer for the new one that to me kind of capture what I remember about the, like, there was a lot about the original where it was about that kind of like, you know, jacking into things and like the heists and a lot of, there was a lot of stuff about the early game that that was very evocative of that kind of, I remember 80s sci-fi and 80s ideas of what cyberspace was. And sure, you know, it's seemingly in the Cyberpunk universe, Wi-Fi and Bluetooth was never invented, right? Yeah, everything is like you pull a wire out of your neck and plug it into a hole in the wall.
Sure.
Like I think I kind of like that, the, you know, the game needs to kind of lean into that kind of more, because it's not 2077, it's a 1980s interpretation of 2077 that made it so magical, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, even Star Wars couldn't imagine email being a thing. The plans right. for the Death Star had to be physically delivered to the Rebellion. Anyway, I think the expansion sounds cool. I think I will return to Cyberpunk when that's released next year. But Sam, will you play The Witcher 3 again if the next-gen version is actually out this year?
Well, I mean, I just, you know, I would like to, but I'm never going to have the time to do that. And I love that game, but just the intro alone is a lot to get through. And getting into the swing of things is like 20 or 30 hours in when I'd actually want to do like different stuff. But I don't think so. For Cyberpunk, I think what could make or break this is like how annoying it is to get into the DLC. It wasn't exactly easy in The Witcher. Like I used my save in The Witcher. I you know, you have to go back. You can't use a completed game save. Obviously you can't get to the stuff from the beginning of the game. It's like square in the middle. So like these games, like a big component of them is that we all have like 300 saves from each of them. Right. I'm just like, how's that going to work? Like I'm really curious about it. And I don't really want to play it standalone, but like, it's just that's the type of thing where it's like that hasn't really been sorted out in video games in general so far. And like, I'm kind of curious how that's going to work.
I mean, I know we just started recently talking about Souls games because Damon wasn't really into them until Elden Ring. But Souls games does DLCs really, really well. Like even if you've played through the game, usually how the DLCs work is that you have to access like a certain thing in a certain area, and then it opens the new DLC areas from that point, which is really cool. Like Bloodborne did that. So it gives you that option, which is really nice. Obviously, if you like do a new game, you have to like go through all the areas and then unlock that area and then do the DLC stuff. But yeah, I feel
or
like
you have to have an old save. If you delete your old saves, like if you're at the end of the game, you might not be able to. Well, maybe
I think you can.
So you'd have to just like, you're like, you're ready to fight the final boss, but you're just going to go do this first. You have to go to that save.
I think you can still do it even with, if you fought the old boss, because like, it gives you that option. Like, do you want to go to NG Plus or just still, you know, mess around?
Right, there's the new game plus, Did Cyberpunk have a new game plus? I can't remember.
I don't remember. I don't think so. I think they were just concerned with their...
It didn't have NG Plus, but it had that thing where after you'd finished the final thing, it dumped you back immediately before. It dumps you back out on the street before you go into the tower, and you can kind of continue like nothing happened.
Well, one thing that makes stuff like this possible, I think to its detriment, is that it can be... It's doing that thing in RPGs where they adjust... every enemy adjusts to your level, so everything's always just like a little bit rubber banded to you. And like, I actually hate that. I think like there should be a, like, everything in this world has level 1 through 70, and if I'm at 13, I could probably take on 15, but maybe not quite yet. Like, I love that type of game, but I really don't like it when it's like, so like, with games that tell stories, though, you kind of lose that. So, like, this is that type of game. So, if you're just going to experience a bunch of story content, that might be cool. But it's hard for me to see, like, the challenge if you can just enter this at any time. Because it just means all the enemies are there are going to be one level ahead of you or whatever. What's the point of leveling? What's the point of the numbers? Is it even an RPG?
Yeah, I don't know. That's fair. Know why.
Yeah.
I've been, like, just trying out a bunch of different games because there's, like, nothing new coming out. So I was playing Pillars of Eternity 2, Dreadfire, and then at the very beginning of the game, Sam, you can decide if you want to have level scaling on or not.
Oh,
or you can also set the degree of level scaling, like it'll only scale in one direction or the other, but just turn it off.
Well,
don't need any level scaling.
I do like the idea of like when you have to grind in games. I love being like, well, one of my options for grinding is to go to an easier area and just bowl over a bunch of enemies. Yeah. Like, that is an option if I don't want to take on one really tough enemy to grind. Like, I just think that's cool. Like, you know, I remember in Dragon Quest, you go back to like the original areas, you could just like, slimes are going to attack you, but they're just like, they die immediately. Like, I love that. It makes you feel good.
Yeah. I like it when there's more than one way to defeat a tough enemy. You can use your skill or you can just put in the time to grind and just become OP.
This is why Damon warmed up to Elden Ring. He found this one arrow hole in a wall and just shot an enemy from it.
Yeah. I love it. Okay, let's turn the clocks back to September 2006. This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. 1 in 5 Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and deliver with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply. Okay, September 2006 issue of Nintendo Power with Rayman Raving Rabbids on the cover. But what I think is interesting is the title of the game does not appear anywhere here. Bunny's Gone Bad, Rayman's Wii Adventure Goes Raving Mad. So I don't know, was the name of the game not official yet? Just there was a Rayman game coming to Wii?
Yeah, I suppose so.
This would be a few months before the launch of the Wii. I was actually at IGN at this time. It was only a few months into my tenure, but GameScoop was probably around episode 10.
Whoa.
Probably right around double digits.
That's so cool. Gosh,
I didn't realize Scoop started that early in your tenure.
Yeah, just a couple months into, after I've been hired.
Were they really short? Were they like 10-minute shows at the time?
No. They're just a regular hour-long podcast.
I took up so much space in people's iPods. It's so rude.
Oh, I know. That's true. John, where were you in 2006?
I was still at the original Ziff Davis. So, like, I was running all the mags plus one up. But also, I was editor-in-chief of official PlayStation magazine. So, I was close to the PlayStation stuff at this point. But we were overseeing all of it. So obviously, with 1UP and EGM. So I remember them. I don't remember if they told us the name. I remember the, there's a Rayman coming to Wii conversations, but I don't remember the circumstances around why it wouldn't have its name on the cover.
Yeah, it is unusual.
I don't suppose any of your magazines were upset that this was on, that Nintendo Power got the cover, right?
I don't recall there being particularly contentious.
at the top it says Mario scores with Final Fantasy. Sam, do you know what that's all about?
Mario scores with Final Fantasy. I have no idea.
I was surprised to learn this too. So the first thing is a confusing ad for Verb. It's three different scenes of kids being active, and I looked it up. Verb was like an initiative by the CDC to get kids to go outside and play, basically.
Put it in Nintendo Power. Smart.
I mean, sure.
And also just ads in Nintendo Power is weird because,
I know.
There's many eras of Nintendo Power without ads because it just is one big ad for Nintendo games already.
Yep. And then in the letters section, there's a couple good letters here. One, Tim Tindo wrote in to say, I was reading through the Pulse sections of the last five or so Nintendo Powers, and I noticed that you guys were seriously making fun of Dragon Ball Z fans. Being a diehard fan myself, I demand an apology. And Nintendo Power's response was, we're truly sorry that you are a diehard Dragon Ball Z fan.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
Yeah, me too. That's the saltiest Nintendo has ever gotten in the history of the world.
I know. Anthony wrote in to say, I just thought of something. It would be possible to play games like Duck Hunt and the Super Scope 6 titles using the Wii controller, wouldn't it? Do you think Light Gun Games will make a comeback with the Wii? Which is interesting because Light Gun Games did make a comeback with the Wii.
They did, yeah.
Not retro ones.
Nintendo Power says, Light Gun Games seem like a no-brainer for Wii. In fact, Nintendo showcased both an updated version of Duck Hunt and a Zapper-style peripheral for the console at this year's E3. So the Zapper, I remember, but an updated Duck Hunt.
I do not remember the updated Duck Hunt. We got to ask Pear about that one. It seems kind of mean to update a Duck Hunt. It's just going to look crueler and crueler to those poor ducks.
Well, because also we have Big Buck Hunter and Cabela's everything.
Yeah.
All of those.
That's true. Those don't have an asshole dog in them, though.
The Nintendo Power also says, now all we need is a new House of the Dead. Make it happen, Sega.
Yes.
Of
course,
they did.
They would get a new House of the Dead.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, they
also
did.
Isn't there a?
It's been a while since
remake of the original. There's a remake of the original House of the Dead coming too, I think.
Yeah.
I
remember the Wii one. It was called House of the Dead Overkill, and I did the guide for it. And to this day, I'm pretty sure that there was an unattainable collectible in it as an error in the game because you couldn't update Wii games.
Oh yeah. Well. So are you sure?
Yeah.
You could go online with your Wii.
You could, but Nintendo refused to allow patches. There's like a couple very scant situations, but they wanted those quality games off the shelf, like Puppy Island and stuff like that. But have no bugs. Pets, babies.
Someone writes in to say, I was looking at some trailers for the new PC game Spore and thought it looked awesome. Is there any talk of bringing the game to Wii? And it wouldn't come to Wii, but Spore Creatures would come to DS.
Spore, man. You know what?
Yeah.
That if this is the Spore month, this would be the first. This is the month that I started freelancing for IGN.
Oh.
Wow.
Did you cover Spore?
A little bit, but mainly my first thing was the skate guide, which must have been this fall.
Okay. I can tell you an old man story. When they announced Spore, it was when the Science Museum in Golden Gate Park with the garden on the roof and the what's it called?
Yeah, the Academy of Sciences.
The Academy, yeah. So that place, I don't think it opened yet. And the first event ever in that building was the Spore launch event. Whoa. And it was, I mean, this was back in the days where people like Will Wright, he was, you know, mm-hmm. much like Peter Molyneux and those sort of like auteur visionary, like you just hung on every word. And like they showed Spore and it was this like, you know, the infinite possibility of what this game is going to allow. And it's like simulating an entire kind of like universe of possibility. And you know, there's the planetarium there, and they showed the game on this gigantic screen, and it felt like, you know, oh my god, this is unlike anything else. And then it came out and didn't quite deliver on all of that.
Yeah. And unlike No Man's Sky, they didn't spend like 4 years correcting it. They just were like, all right, no, see ya. Let's make another Sim-Ant game. Yeah.
What? Yeah, where did Will Wright go?
Yeah, where's Will Wright, John? You know where he is.
He's in Emeryville, and I think he's building robots, I believe.
Oh,
I don't think what he actually didn't anticipate is that people would spend more time making creatures that look like penises than they did actually playing the game.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So not in the game industry anymore, then, huh?
I don't believe so. No.
Interesting. John, I want to ask you this. So this is Nintendo Power in 2006. The publisher is T. Kamishima, and the editor in chief is Yoshio Tsuboike. So it would have been handed off to Japan, like Nintendo Japan, maybe. It was started in Seattle.
Yeah, but I think wasn't it always kind of like supervised by the Japanese thing? Because like anyone I knew that ever kind of crossed paths with working on it would complain that they had virtually no autonomy to make the magazine at all. Huh. And, you know, there were lots of decisions that were made above them. And because, you know, I mean, there were different flavors of official magazine, right? Where, you know, and I think Nintendo Power was on the furthest extreme of, you know, it wasn't really editorially independent. It was a corporate voice. Propaganda.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was propaganda.
Sure. Which we ate up. Happily.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the first name in editorial consultants is Reggie Fils-Aimé.
Oh,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good. But lots of Japanese names on the list here. Okay, Most Wanted, which was voted by fans at Nintendo.com. Most Wanted Nintendo GameCube game was Twilight Princess, then Super Paper Mario, Baten Kaitos Origins, mm-hmm. Lego Star Wars 2, the original trilogy, and Super Monkey Ball Adventure. Most Wanted Game Boy Advance was Final Fantasy VI, Final Fantasy V, Yggdra Union, I don't even know how to pronounce that, Tomb Raider Legend, and Metal Slug. And then over on Nintendo DS, it was Phantom Hourglass, which I guess would have just been revealed at GDC that year.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Final Fantasy III, Castlevania Portrait of Ruin, Children of Mana, and Yoshi's Island 2. So all old games except for Phantom Hourglass. Mm-hmm. And I guess Portrait of Ruin is the new Castlevania.
So good, too. I love that game.
Yeah. But
it shows you how enduring some of that stuff is, right? 16 years later, and I think if you were to ask Nintendo fans things that they wanted for a new Nintendo system, a lot of the franchise names would be the same, right?
Yeah, totally.
Sure. Yeah. Still getting Mana games for the Nintendo Switch. On the top sellers for GameCube, I guess I don't remember how dire a time it was for GameCube in 2006 when the Wii was about to launch, because the best-selling game this month was Over the Hedge, which is like a tie-in to an animated film.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah, and then others on the list are Rampage, Total Destruction, Naruto, Class of Ninja, Mario Kart Double Dash, which was 3 years old at this time. Super Smash Bros. Melee was 5 years old at this time.
Yikes.
There was just, when I was in it and I had a GameCube at the time, I don't remember it being like that dry for big new releases.
I do.
Well, Mario Kart endures on every platform, right? Like we were just doing something where we were looking at the best-selling games of 2022 so far, and Mario Kart's in the top 10.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Damon, I would say that like completely sums up my experience with the GameCube, because I didn't have another system for a long time. Mm-hmm. So that made those dry spells were really dry.
That's interesting.
But, you know, then there'd be like a summer that had Prince of Persia, Sands of Time, and Beautiful Joe and stuff like that. Those were really exciting times for the GameCube, and then it would go for a year after that.
This is really interesting for me to hear everyone's experience, because like I was in seventh grade.
Yep.
So I wasn't allowed to I'm just like, yes. I've heard of those games.
Well, but, so you weren't playing any games at the time in seventh grade?
So I think whenever Twilight Princess came out, my sister, my dad actually got the Wii to play Call of Duty, of all things.
Yeah.
So yeah. Which like, if you remember, they had that weird like gun, holder thingy for your so we played Twilight Princess together on the couch, and I remember that, and I was like, oh, this is a really cool game, but like not, I wasn't really allowed to play. I was allowed to have an hour of computer time, like I was not gaming. So
but the Wii would have been your intro to console gaming then, basically, because of Wii Sports and everything.
I think so, yeah. I mean, my first ever game that I really played with was Banjo-Kazooie, but that was like on a friend's
platform.
Yeah,
that was a good place to start.
Yeah.
Cool. You're in good company with Banjo-Kazooie.
Yes.
Here, Sam, Square Enix made Mario Hoops 3 on 3.
The Hoops, of course. Yeah. I remember
it's
this.
Cute.
Which, wait, is this the reference on the cover?
Yeah.
Yeah. So a Mario basketball game for DS that I guess included Final Fantasy characters in the game. I never played it.
Yeah.
That is a somewhat misleading cover line.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah.
Wow. What I liked about this game is that they made, you know, like basketball outfits for all the characters, and they're adorable. Like right? I remember like Daisy and, you know, Peach and stuff like that. They just have like, everybody has like a cool, like unique basketball uniform. Aww. Bowser. It's really funny. They had good art for it.
Demo memo for DS owners. Grab your DS and head to a demo station equipped store. You remember this being a thing?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
That's how you got your Nintendogs from like Hillary Duff or whatever.
Oh my God.
I think they'd have them at like McDonald's too, right?
Yeah. And I bet in Japan they were everywhere. But here it was like a GameStop thing mainly.
Yeah. You could take your DS to these stations and download demos for games like Big Brain Academy, Metroid Prime Hunters, Over the Hedge. Maybe that's why they sold so many copies.
Oh my God.
And then in the big news in shorts, LucasArts has revealed that its next Indiana Jones game, due in 2007, will also crack the whip on DS. The story remains under a veil of cobwebs and secrecy. What Indiana Jones game would that be?
I do not know, but I didn't play it. I don't think it came out, especially if it came out for DS also.
I think there was like a really bad one that came to like Wii, PS2, and DS
really
around that time.
Wait, would that, when did Crystal Skull come out? Was that around then?
Yeah, it totally was.
Probably around then. Yeah, it was 7 or 08, right?
Yeah, so it could have just been a straight-up movie tie-in game. That would have been very avoidable.
Nintendo Breakthrough. So talking about the Wii Connect 24, that service coming to Wii. But listen to the way they talk about Satoru Iwata back at this time. Said, after hearing a few years of Satoru Iwata's predictions and plans, considered nutty no longer now that the Nintendo president's DS vision has become reality, the world has learned to listen to his every word. Iwata offered his latest not crazy talk at Nintendo's corporate policy briefing in June, and though he touched on E3 details about Wii and DS, he discussed them in a way that showed more of the larger picture, plus made big revelations as well. It just talks about how they're like blue ocean strategy and trying to cater to new gamers while also satisfying traditional hardcore gamers as well. But it's just strange to hear people talk about
I don't recall Iwata having doubters at this point. When did Brain Age come out? Because like that was when he got the most right. So remember all the stuff, I mean, at GDC, I don't know if you, any of you were at GDC, where they like handed out Brain Age to everyone there because it was such a sort of breakthrough in thinking on what the DS could be. And like, people were fully on board with what the potential of the DS was. And honestly, it was kind of prescient of what mobile gaming could potentially become back then, right? It was like, eventually you're going to have a device in your pocket and you can do everything on it.
Well, I do remember our editor-in-chief at that time saying the DS was Nintendo's Dreamcast, and it was like the worst idea. So I know people thought that Iwata was, you know, that the existence of the thing itself was completely crazy until it came out and caught on. And of course, Wii had a much quicker ramp up to being popular than the DS did.
I think the DS might be my favorite Nintendo device ever.
It's pretty incredible. That DS Lite.
I have so many fond memories of it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think September 06, the DS Lite would have been out by now, I think.
Hmm. Yeah.
I didn't remember this. Anyone remember the Nintendo Fusion Tour? Nintendo did its own music festival, like,
no,
like a Warped Tour.
Yikes.
Never heard of that.
This year is Hawthorne Heights, Reliant K, Emery, the Plain White Tees, the Sleeping. So a bunch of emo bands, I think. I don't remember Nintendo doing its own music festival.
That's hilarious.
Huh.
Seems a little out of character for them, honestly.
I guess so, yeah. Pretty cool for them. They had a preview for Castlevania Portrait of Ruin, which is amazing. Donkey Kong King of Swing DS.
Mm-hmm.
Sam, did you play that one?
Yeah, that one you only control the L and R buttons.
Yeah.
And Donkey Kong just goes oh like this. God.
And there was one very similar to Game Boy Advance too, right? This just allowed for a longer screen.
I believe so.
Cover story on Raving Rabbids, Rayman Raving Rabbids, but this is the Raving Rabbids are coming to Wii, and neither Rayman nor conventional game design is safe.
Oh my God, that's terrifying. What the?
Okay, here they finally say their first line of their copy is when Rayman Raving Rabbids was first announced, but they're kind of hiding the name of the game here. This is very long. Cover feature just on Rayman. And then they have an interview with someone on the team for Twilight Princess. And I just think it's interesting. It's someone by the name of Daiji Imai, who is like, what is his responsible? He's like project manager on Twilight Princess. And it's just someone that I've never heard his name in any other like Nintendo dealings or even about Breath of the Wild or anything. But like, he was like a project manager on Twilight Princess. And this whole feature, it's not an interview with him. It's like an essay written by him just explaining what his role at Nintendo is and like where the game is at in development. And then it ends with a picture of him snorkeling, and it says in his scarce free time, Imai enjoys putting on his diving gear and visiting with the sea life. And it's a picture of him. He's got his mouth open and a fish is swimming into his mouth.
Oh!
And I just like, it's just an interesting picture to put of yourself in a magazine that's going to be read by maybe 100,000 people.
Maybe he just really liked that picture. I don't know.
Maybe. Maybe. Big feature on Red Steel. Who remembers the Ubisoft Wii launch game, Red Steel?
Yeah, in our pre-show discussion of this, this was the game that, like, you know, wherever it was shown off first, and I believe it was in Scans in a magazine that wasn't this one, it was some other magazine, it looked like the shots they chose made it look really good, like a 360 quality game. And there was a bunch of arguing, like, maybe the Wii can get the power that the 360 can, and maybe it's just like they figured something special out in it, you know. It was like that,
and then we learned that they cannot,
it couldn't.
Yeah, but I think, John, were you saying like this actually gave a preview of what it would be like to play first person games in VR?
Yeah, very much. I mean, if you remember, you aimed the gun with the Wii remote while you were controlling with the analog stick in your other hand, and it was a lot like playing a shooter in VR, where it was kind of, you weren't really running and shooting. You were kind of moving from place to place and then standing in place and waving your other hand around to aim and shoot at things. And pacing of the game was this, it was almost like you were moving to a point where a bunch of enemies would spawn and you would shoot them and then you would move on, which is exactly the pattern that we've seen in VR shooters, because it's, you know, again, it's the control mechanism is just, it doesn't work right. I think at that point, though, people were just gobbling up anything. I mean, like, the Wii very quickly, I mean, the games that sold well on Wii, when you look back, that like, there are some shocking games that performed extremely well because there were so many people bought them so quickly, and just the appetite was voracious that like all kinds of garbage did well. I mean, this game was bad.
Yeah.
Well, and it also sold, the upsell was also the promise of the swords, right? So like from the very start, it was like, oh, you can do sword battles with the Wii remote, and it would be like this groundbreaking fun thing to do. Now, developers knew this whole time that it didn't work that well, and so they would limit you in these kind of like clashes instead of just walking around swatting at people with your sword. So much so that they had to update the Wii remote eventually to be better at that. And then they built a whole Zelda game around it, which was like still janky. And it didn't work on stage when Miyamoto showed it off, remember? So like this game was all about like the use of the sword and how a cool looking, and then the third factor, adult game, right? Wii. Yeah. It was a really dumb sounding name still. It looked like it was for kids. And this was like, well, but like you might want to own the Wii for your first person shooter needs too, which is like, again, like that didn't end up really being true, except for Stella's dad, right?
it was so weird.
Got Call of Duty on it.
Yeah, that controller thing was so weird. I tried it out and I was like, this does not make sense to my brain. I would rather, because like at the same time, every time I would go over to my friend's place, I would play like on their 360 or whatever. And I'm like, I'd rather play on a normal controller. So I was like, this is a very weird setup. I do not like it.
Well, there was two very good shooters on the Wii that used the Wii Remote by the end of its life cycle when they kind of sorted out stuff. And that, I would say Resident Evil 4 and Metroid Prime 3 were really good pointing and moving around shooters. Okay. But like, you didn't need to do that. We're all still really good with controllers. Like, it didn't make it more fun necessarily. But I think it's still...
I had completely forgotten about that little doodad that you had to slot into the bottom of the Wii Remote to make it more accurate. Like, I completely forgot about that.
Wii
remember, they had to. They also had to sell... like longer rubber holders as well to be able to hold it in place.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. All that. And then they put the Wii Motion Plus inside a controller and you could get like a gold one of those for the,
I think I have one of those somewhere,
which is cool.
Yeah.
But they didn't work that much better. You know, to this day, it's kind of funny. Cause like, you remember those all had the positioning bar and everything, and you know there was gyroscopes too. But now, like, I think the little Switch controllers work about as well as like a Wii Motion Plus controller, and they have no sensors except for gyroscopes and stuff. It's just kind of funny to think how far that technology has come, mainly because of phones, right?
Yeah,
your phone can tell you you're in an accident now.
Yeah, I think IGN gave Red Steel a 6, but then it did get a sequel that I think was a little bit better received. Year or two later?
Yeah. So that one was a cel-shaded Borderlands-looking game. A lot more fun. That, I guess you can throw that in the you can walk around and shoot versions of Wii games that worked really well. That one worked great. I wrote the guide for that one.
Oh, wow. Well, speaking of sixes, Pokemon Mystery Dungeon also got a 6 from IGN, although I tend to like these kinds of games. And then there's a Pokemon like manga comic inserted here in this Nintendo Power, and look how long this thing is. It's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Wow. It's like... 25 pages long. It's a like full-length comic inserted into this Nintendo Power.
That's funny.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Just keeps going and going.
Stylish too.
And then like we said, the DS Lite have been out by this time, and I don't know, they have 7 like bright ideas, 7 good things that it does, but it's just the obvious things. It's slimmer, it's more comfortable to use, the microphone works, the stylus feels good, just things like that. But the DS Lite was amazing.
It still looks great. It's just like it looks awesome and modern and cool. And like, I just want to play it so bad right now.
Yeah, so good. They have a preview of which one? Mega Man ZX, which I never played this part of the series, but it's interesting that this is Anycreates that makes this in Sam. It's the same studio that does the Bloodstained Curse of the Moon games. Oh. And then... the Blaster Master Zero games.
Yeah, those are great games. But and still, I believe there's a ZX collection coming out, right?
Or is that Zero? There already is.
Yeah, it's confusing to me.
It's hard. This era of Mega Man is confusing to me. there's a preview for the Tingle game, which never came out here.
Oh, yeah.
And what was the full title of this? This Tingles, is Freshly Picked Magic. Tingles Rose Colored Ruby Land.
Yes.
But what's interesting is that it came out in Japan and it was released in Europe, but not here. Yeah. I don't know why.
I imported it. I loved it.
You were able to play it?
Yeah. I used some kind of internet resource to play it. And then I also played another Tingle game that never came out here, which was the Tingle Balloon Fight game.
Oh, wow.
Also on DS.
Cool. They're having a contest, some sort of player's poll. Grand prize is a DS Lite. Second prize is, Star Fox, a copy of Star Fox Command on DS. But what I like is third prize is this T-shirt, a gray T-shirt that just says "I'm ready to play" in the middle, it kind of small text, and that's it. It doesn't say Nintendo Power or anything about Nintendo or any Nintendo characters. Just says "I'm ready to play."
It was the style at the time.
Which was the style at the time?
Maybe there was a Nintendo logo on the sleeve or the back, which is the worst thing ever.
Maybe, but I don't know. Classified info was still a thing, Sam.
Yes. I love it.
They have a code, a way to play as Luigi in New Super Mario Brothers. It's one of their codes in this episode. And there's an ad for Game Crazy. Anyone remember Game Crazy?
Rental?
I don't really. It was,
it was a trade thing, right?
Yeah, it was Hollywood Video's answer to GameStop, I think. So it was like, it started out as like a store within a store of Hollywood Video.
Okay.
Ooh. Oh, interesting.
Well, But I just noticed it's the ad is a guy in his car, and the hatchback is completely full of like retro games. Mm-hmm. It says time to trade. His license plate says 8-bit, but then he has a bumper sticker that says I break for Frogger, which I'd put that on my car.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Somebody here at IGN started their career at Game Crazy, but I can't recall who right now. But I just heard that name recently because it was like, oh yeah, I worked at the Game Crazy in a Hollywood video somewhere.
Game Crazy. There's an ad for Nintendo DS, which. What strikes me is the copy is I don't know, it just seems, it says, so it simulates the two screens of the DS. Kid is on the bottom, lying down, playing DS. Up top, Mario and Luigi are jumping through the clouds. That makes sense. But then the copy says, this is the part where you go somewhere better. And it just strikes me as like, what, you're targeting like teens, or you're talking like sad, angsty teens?
Oh, yeah.
Why does that sound so ominous?
Yeah.
Your life sucks, so like, just escape into this.
Oh my God, okay.
Finally, like, here's something that's, you know, that isn't going to be crappy for you. This is the part where you go somewhere better.
Huh.
It isn't going to be crappy for you.
What the?
In the back of the magazine, they stick a retrospective of an old Nintendo game, and it's Karnov.
Cool.
Everyone's favorite, I don't know.
A bad arcade game, performer. But a pretty funny NES game.
Oh.
Yeah,
but it's bad too. It's not like Rygar. It just momentarily confuses. No, Karnov, a fire-breathing circus guy that walks left to right and does very little else.
Yeah. And then in their sort of community spotlight section, they spotlight a website, the Double Dragon Dojo. Which is, you know, back, you know, remember when there were like fan sites that would just be about one game series and it would catalog every game that was out? I checked. Double Dragon Dojo, still online.
Cool.
It has. Really? It was last updated in 2016 because that's when Double Dragon 4 was announced.
Nice.
But you can still visit the Double Dragon Dojo even today. And that's it. Next month they're going to do Final Fantasy 3 coming to DS, and then Star Fox Command. Metroid Prime 3 Corruption is going to be in there, Sam.
Hey.
So you may want to check it out. That was the September 2006 issue of Nintendo Power. Jobert, I'm going to stop sharing my screen now. Let's check in with the listeners.
Well, howdy.
Listeners, remember you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like Tyler did. And Tyler wants to know, why don't more modern shooters implement ragdoll physics like they used to? So Saints Row just came out. Let him explain. Saints Row just came out, and I can't get over how lifeless the gunplay looks. It feels like ragdoll physics have been replaced by damage numbers or health bars. And in my opinion, a lot of player creativity is lost because of this. Is this mostly a creative choice, or are developers choosing to lean on damage numbers and health bars for technical reasons? So I think these are two different things that he's talking about, right?
Yeah.
And I think ragdoll was just a very exaggerated physics system where everything just flailed its arms and legs around and fell through the air. I mean, like, basically every game you ever boot up has a Havoc logo at the front, which is the physics system that's all the animation is. But I don't know. I mean, there are still crazy stuff that use ragdoll physics. There are some great fighting games on Steam that are built entirely around it.
Yeah.
There are some great glitches in Skyrim that lead to it.
Yep.
Where people just fire into the air.
Very much. God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was introduced in the late 90s, and at the time it was cool because before that, enemy death animations were, you know, bespoke. They were like created.
Right.
And they all had like this, they all like died in the same exact way because they're all just running through the same animation.
Mm-hmm.
So it provided some like variation in the ways that enemies' bodies fell down, but it didn't look particularly realistic. And I guess I just assume that, you know, physics engines in video games have gotten a lot better. They don't need to really rely on just ragdoll, just like lifelessly flailing around when they get shot. Right?
Well, if you think about why it's called that and like what a ragdoll is, it's like a kind of a lifeless but also kind of light being, and that's what they always kind of looked like. They'd slide around too much or fall off things, but like at the time, seeing that object in the environment being manipulated by a physics engine was a sign of graphical intensity, and so it just looked cool. And it's like particle physics, like, you know, like it's not really approaching reality necessarily in some situations, just a lot of stuff on screen. But I thought if you think about also like what are like the ragdoll physics were, it was probably like, you know, five weight points. It was probably like, you know, the chest arm, arm, leg, leg, or something. And then you just saw like a very rudimentary expression of like how that five pointed thing would move through the environment. And usually would clip through it like crazy and look crappy anyway. But now that's not really how physics works in games, but it hasn't like evolved to the point where like everything has its own fluid dynamic system or anything. There's just more points that are doing the same thing. So it's like bodies are doing that, but they're like, you can assign like more detailed weight and more points. And there's an actual center of gravity it's considering and stuff like that. And then also we have like, limb deformation so much now. Like, why even kill an enemy with all of its arms anymore? There's just no point.
I mean, there's still a lot of ragdoll, like, in FPS games. Like, Halo Infinite still has a ton of really
Halo's
funny
Halo's a great
ones.
Example of yeah, that, actually.
Like, yeah. Infinite yeah. still has that. Fallout 4 still has it, which, you know, I'd, like, kind of have to. Apex has it. Yeah, I think, I don't know what kind of games this reader's playing, but, or
Fallout's
playing,
a funny example because it's all in slow motion, right? So you, like, see
oh
it.
Oh, my God,
like,
it's
doing,
so funny.
Like, oh, you see it, yeah.
Yeah, it's so
total
good.
Marionette style, like, somebody clipped the strings and everything just yeah. collapses.
So good.
Yep.
But Tyler, damage numbers and health bars aren't a replacement for that. That's just a way to give the player feedback, you know, on what sort of damage you're doing. Whereas the physics dictate how the enemy's, you know, body is reacting to the environment.
Yeah, and if you're playing a game with scaling levels, it gives you feedback that has no meaning.
Okay. Extracurricular activities. There's a lot to watch out there right now. Is everyone watching House of the Dragon?
Yes.
Nope. Yes. No, I'm not watching it. So, did you watch Game of Thrones? Are you just not interested?
I did, and you know, I know that these are different showrunners and stuff, but also I haven't had my HBO subscription up for a while, so I'm just kind of waiting for more episodes to come out. But yeah, Game of Thrones. I loved that series so much, and then the ending was just butchered. So, sure. Yeah, but I do hear a lot of people liking this. But I chose to watch the new Lord of the Rings show instead. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like working through fantasy one step
too.
At a time.
Well, yeah. Well, we'll talk about that in just a second. House of the Dragon. So no spoilers. I'm liking it so far.
Okay.
I'm not like over the moon about it, but liking it. The stakes are much lower, I think. You know. From where we start here, I think they're a lot lower from where we started from Game of Thrones. I don't know, Sam, what do you think?
Well, I agree. So, like, in Game of Thrones, there was one plot that was who would be king. There was a whole nother plot that's like, what's going to happen to Westeros? And then, like, 50 yeah. other plots about all the families that you care about and all the characters. This has yeah. one. It's like, yeah. who's going to be king next? Who's going to be queen yeah. next? One family, and then everybody else is a bit player. That is so different than how the plot was kind of composed in Game of Thrones. And you know, maybe it can spread out to that. But right now, it seems like what we're following, like if you took Game of Thrones or A Song of Ice and Fire, the books, and you clipped yeah. out everything but the Stark chapters, that's what this is. Which, you know, I don't think that's as interesting, but it's obviously enjoyable to watch. I also think the CG and like the general like look of it looks bad. Like I just think it looks like really? washed out. It just looks like I mean, look at it right now. It looks like your camera did before we fixed it ahead of the show. Like everything has a muted color palette, and everything has like a oversaturated like kind of glow or glare to it. I'm not.
Yeah,
like,
they've announced they're going to fix it. Right where
I didn't hear
which
that.
You,
really,
which is a weird thing that you can now say about a show is yeah. that you can yeah. like. Re-output the video and fix some of the effects.
Oh,
I've loved Matt Smith since he was Doctor Who. I'm having a hard time with yep. him in this role.
Yeah.
I'm also having a hard time with his wig, which looks ridiculous.
Yeah.
One of many ridiculous wigs.
So weird. So for y'all who liked the show and liked Game of Thrones, do you feel like this was necessary? Like, do you feel like it's good supplemental viewing for
no, it was absolutely not necessary okay. at all.
Okay.
I mean,
but,
yeah. We'll
but
see
sometimes
where it all
popcorn
ends up,
is not necessary, right? And yeah, so it's still true. Enjoyable. To answer your question directly, I agree with John. And then I do, there's certain worlds I want to return to and like an experience and live in. This isn't one of them because it's not very inviting.
Yeah.
You know, but I want to be invited into this world to like follow a cool plot line and like it's got to get to that point because just yeah. seeing it all again is like, yeah, I've seen this before.
Okay.
It's got a different tone from Game of Thrones, whereas like it's a considerably less mean-spirited and like there's There's like no evil people really right now. There's just like not a lot of bad things happening.
What about that crab guy?
Yeah, but that's just one thing. We also didn't really. I could have stood to learn a little bit more about him. Sorry, no spoilers. We'll try to avoid spoilers. I also went 44 years of my life without ever hearing my name unless people were talking to me. So that.
Oh yeah, I didn't think about that.
It's weird. First of his name, they call him in this show, but that makes you second, Damon.
Yeah.
Well, that's not too bad. Number two. Anyway, I'm liking that well enough to keep watching it. And I'm also liking Rings of Power well enough to keep watching it.
Yeah.
Although maybe
do you feel that anything has actually happened in that show yet, though?
No, and especially some of the stuff that's happening with our mysterious visitor that fall from the sky. I'm like really frustrated with all that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I like the show. It's absolutely gorgeous, which it better be with that budget.
But it looks better than Game of Thrones. I'll give it that.
Okay. Yeah, it's gorgeous. And like the actors are great. But like, yeah, I find myself, it's been so long. And I also didn't read any of the books prior to this. So like watching this, I was Googling a lot of things as I was watching it. I was like, wait, what was this again? What was this? So it's a lot of knowledge. I don't think it's as inviting as like Game of Thrones is because like Game of Thrones, you don't really have to know much and you can just kind of watch it. But this, like they already kind of, they kind of cliff notes a lot of the stuff. So when you're going through it, you're just like, wait, what was that? So it's gorgeous and I'm excited to see where it goes. But like, I mean,
yeah,
it's fun viewing.
It's not. So, it's not a prequel to the Peter Jackson films, right?
No, it's not. Because it's not part of that same universe. But, it's based on like 30 pages of footnotes.
Yes.
Not footnotes, but notes in The Return of the King appendices, among other notes.
Yeah. My first issue was just like this portrayal of Galadriel doesn't seem to line up with the Galadriel from the Peter Jackson films. But if it's not a prequel of the films, then, sure, it doesn't. Just do it.
I mean, I think they're probably being sort of like she's reached this serene state at that point, which is thousands of years in the future. So I think you're kind of seeing the grittier, raw version of her. The way the show's paced, though, it reminds me. Did any of you watch Foundation on Apple TV?
No, but
that was loosely. So it was loosely based on very loosely based on the Asimov books. But that was 10 episodes, and the first 4 or 5 of them were really establishing characters and environments and the political situation, and then. Like episodes 6 through 10 really kind of delivered on the promise. But to me, Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power feels like that as well, where it's doing a lot of like, okay, here's a bunch of stuff you need to understand before we actually tell you anything.
Mm-hmm. So one thing that concerns me is kind of to talk about what you were talking about with Game of Thrones versus this. So I think there are levels of like, how much background do you need to have? So Game of Thrones, I know a lot of people were lost because there was all the conversations about who is that character again, but it was ancillary stuff. It wasn't like the main stuff. You could follow that. And this, like basically everything is like unknown to people, even Galadriel, because she's 2,500 years in the past and got a different character. And there's just a lot of, it's confusing. It's basically like watching a fantasy show booted from nothing. So knowing that, although when they start introducing the rings, like then it'll make a little bit more sense and stuff like that. And we know, but what I want to say though, is that it's funny because they're introducing this world that's like a fantasy world with fantasy factions, like dwarves and elves and everything. Everything has that, but Tolkien invented that. I mean, in the sense of like the modern fantasy, of course, there's also, Norse lore and stuff like that. I'm not discounting that. I'm just saying that like, if you have a game like World of Warcraft and it has like elves in it, it's like, it's from Tolkien. Like it just is. They didn't like, go back and go to the Ring of the Nibelung and be like, oh, this is this where this is from. Like, it's not from that. It's from Tolkien. So it's like, in some respects, like, everything that's going on, but it makes it really familiar too. Mm-hmm. Like I won't be I'll be a little disappointed when they like show Ents or whatever, because it's like, it's not like that big reveal from before. It's just kind of the thing you've already seen. And that's the problem with building things off Tolkien that he didn't write, that he's not doing like new stuff for. It's like, they're just kind of, it's like a variation on a theme that I'm very familiar with already.
Yeah. And like, so like, it's not canon, right?
Well, there's no such thing as canon, because there's like the the Peter Jackson movies, then there's the books. Those aren't even the same things, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, if this is in line with the license from the books, that's basically all you can say is like canon, you know? But like, it's not canon because like, Tolkien didn't say like, and then a guy fell out of the sky. He did say that about the Maiar, but that was thousands of years later, even though the Maiar existed this time. So like, there's like all kinds of stuff which they can be like, they are using the rules that Tolkien set out, right? That, you know, Balrogs existed because Morgoth created them, but they're not using like, and then this Balrog, you know, like fought Galadriel. Like none of that's accounted for, you know?
Well, like I said, I'm enjoying it well enough. Keep watching. It's nice to have two new fantasy shows to watch every week.
Yeah.
And that brings us to Video Game 20 Questions. Stella, do you know how this works?
I do not.
You haven't played this with us before.
No.
You know how 20 questions works? You have 20 yes or no questions to guess what a thing is.
Oh, God. Okay.
You already have a head start here because you know it's going to be a video game.
Great, that narrows it down.
Our suggestion this week comes from Trevor Swayze, and I'm going to choose to believe there is a relation. Let the questioning begin.
Okay, so I think we should narrow down an era first, and here's a fun way to do it. Could this game have been in this issue of Nintendo Power?
Could it have been? No. No.
Okay, so it probably came out, you know, 2006 or after.
Okay.
Was this a console exclusive?
Yes.
Okay, that really helps.
Okay.
That'll make it easier on all of us.
Okay. Should we narrow the platform?
Go for it.
Was it a PlayStation exclusive?
No.
Was it an Xbox exclusive?
No.
Okay.
Okay.
So here's where it gets funny, because it could be we said console exclusive. So I was going to say it can also be PC sometimes and other things, but it sounds like it's a Nintendo exclusive. Was this game published by Nintendo?
No. That's 5.
Interesting. Was it a Nintendo console exclusive? Let's just get that out of the way.
Yes.
Okay. So not published by Nintendo, though. That's interesting.
Okay. Oh, man.
All right. Should we go genre?
Yeah, we can go genre. We should probably get the era still. Did this game come out on a cartridge, which would be DS and 3DS?
No.
Okay. So it's not one of the handheld systems, which is good. Did this have motion controls?
No.
Weird.
If it didn't... Huh. Was it on the Wii U?
Yes.
Oh!
Good.
Oh.
Good.
Okay, cool.
No motion controls, third-party exclusive on the Wii U. I bet it's Monster Hunter. Was this published by Capcom?
No, that's 10.
Okay.
Oh.
We're halfway through.
Were there many third-party exclusives on Wii U? There can't have been that many, right?
There was Zombie U. Ubisoft.
Oh,
okay. Yeah.
That was a good one. I think we've had it before, but that doesn't stop Damon ever. Was this a Ubisoft title?
Yes.
So there's also Rayman. Okay. There was like a Rayman game.
Okay.
Right? That was.
Wouldn't it be funny if it was Raving Rabbids?
Yes. Oh my God.
It happens. Was this game like rated, you know, would this be teen and up?
Yes.
Okay. I think we have our answer.
Yeah.
I think it's probably Zombie U, right?
I think so. Do you fight zombies in this game?
Yes, you do.
All right.
So, Stella, do you want to ask the final question? You want the honors?
Zombie University?
No, U doesn't stand for anything, unfortunately.
It's just Zombie U?
Well, yeah.
Oh, what?
It stands for whatever the U stands for in Wii U.
Okay. All right.
Just ask if it's Zombie U.
Yeah, Damon, is it Zombie U?
It sure is.
Hey!
Zombie.
Yay.
I guess the U could also be for Ubisoft.
It could be. Yeah.
It was a Ubisoft game.
Oh my God, look at this game. I've never seen this.
Yeah, you got your map on your Wii U control pad there. And then you also, I think, had the backpack. There we go.
That's actually pretty cool.
Inventory.
Man.
In real time. So it's stressful because the game could be going while you're adjusting your backpack.
That's actually really cool. Huh.
I think we gave it a 7.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be okay. And it was exclusive.
The trailer makes it look way better than it was.
Yeah, that makes it look way cooler, but I'm pretty sure like the execution was not like as smooth, but you know.
I remember it being a little stretched thin.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the sniper thing's so cool though.
Yeah, the sniper's funny.
It was a Wii U exclusive for 3 years, and then it came to PS4 and Xbox One in 2015.
Okay.
So like Red Steel, a Ubisoft like try to appeal to, you know, an older violent audience at the launch of a Nintendo system for, that was kind of marketed towards children. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, that's, I guess that was the relationship that Nintendo and Ubisoft had.
And I guess it's not launch, but it was close.
Well, Zombie U, nicely job, everyone.
Yeah.
Thank you for the suggestion. Trevor Sweezy, viewers, listeners, if you have your own suggestions for 20 questions, email them to me at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. And that is all the scoops that we have for you this week. Stella, thank you for joining us. We'll make sure make sure that the show doesn't last for another 16 years before we have you on again.
Yeah. I'm just proud of my Wii U question.
Thank you.
Yeah. You were the one that isolated the Wii U.
That was what we call
Thank you, Sam. Thank you to Jobert and everyone working behind the scenes to make this episode possible. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season 1 was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to Season 1, we are thrilled to announce the launch of Season 2. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make Season 2 even more memorable together.